Yes, people, it's that time of the week again. Hope you're ready for a new episode of Echo Chamber. Today we have five films, right? Five interesting, very different films. But before we get into that, let's start off as we do with the UK box office top 10 for the weekend of the 30th of December to the 1st of January. So, at number 10 last week, we had Godzilla Minus One. This is what is, written by Takashi Yamazaki. Right, in its starring Minami Hamabe, Sakura Ando, Yuki Yamada, Michael Arras, Yua Enyo, Kushik Idi. At number 9, Napoleon. Right, Ridley Scott directs, and it's written by David Scrappa, starring Joaquin Phoenix, Vanessa Kirby, Ludwin Zagnier, Rupert Everett, Mark Bonner, Ben Mills, Catherine Walker, Ian McNeice, Tahar Rahim. Right, so that means at number 8, we have The Hunger Games, The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes. Francis Lawrence behind the helm. Susan Collins, Michael Ant and Michael Leslie writing the script. We have Rachel Zegler, Tom Blythe, Viola Davis, Dexter Sol Ansel, Rosa Gutzler, Clemens Schnick, Fonula Flanagan, Hunter Shafar, Ashley Lyle, all doing their thing, which means at number 7, right, we have got Next Goal Wins. This is the latest Taika Waititi film, which he co-wrote with Ian Morris. It stars Michael Fassbender, Kamana, Oscar Knightley, David Fane, Rachel House, Balukal, Taika Waititi, Will Arnett, Elizabeth Moss, Caesar Gray, Simu Filippo. Right, so at number 6, it is Wish. Right, this is from Fawn Versenfun, right, and Chris Buck. Buck also co-writes with Alison Moore and Jennifer Lee. We have a voice cast of Evan Peters, Chris Pine, Alan Tudyk, Arina Dabas, Harvey Gillion, Victor Garber, Angelique Carbel, Rami Youssef, Della Saba. Right, so we are in our top 5, and at number 5 is Anyone But You. This is from Will Glock, who co-writes with Ilana Wolpert, starring Sydney Sweeney, Glenn Powell, Alexander Shipp, Darren Barnett, Brian Brown, Joe Davison, Gatta, Rachel Griffiths, Michelle Hurd, Dermot Mullery. Right, at number 4, we have The Boy and the Heron, the new Hayao Miyazaki film, which he also writes. Voice cast of Soma Santoki, Mizuki Suda, Takuri Kimura, Imion, Koi Shashishiki. Right, at number 3 is Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom. like James Wan directs and co-writes with David Leslie Johnson McGoldrick and Jason Momoa, right? Momoa also stars along with Ben Affleck, Patrick Wilson, Yahya Abdul-Mateen II, Dolph Lundgren, Tamira Morrison, Nicole Kidman, Jani Zhu, Amber Heard, Vincent Regan, Randall Park. At number two is Ferrari. This is from Alessandra Devadrudi, written by Kambuzia Patovi, right? Starring Mohammed Reza Devadrudi. Reza Kanayan, Talon Pavrash. So the number one film, not really a surprise, it is Wonka. Paul King directs and co-writes with Simon Farnaby, and it's starring Timothy Chalamet, Olivia Colman, Hugh Grant, Patterson Joseph, Sally Hawkins, Keegan-Michael Key, Rowan Atkinson, Matthew Baton, Simon Farnaby, Matt Lucas, Jim Carter, Tom Davis, Natasha Rothwell. So, that, people, is, that's our films, that's our top 10 of the week, right? And yes, I think it is probably time that we get into, right, we get into this week's films. So if you're ready, sit back and let's go. Okay, so we're gonna start off with Good Grief, right? We got two feature directorial debuts, and this is the first. So let's go. Okay, so Good Grief. It's now dropped on Netflix. It is written and directed by Dan Levy. He also produces along with Kate Fennick, Deborah Haywood, and Megan Zimmer. It's executive produced by Stacey Snyder and Carolyn Levy. Music was handled by Rob Simonson. Ollie Bratt Brickland handles cinematography. Jonathan Korn edits the piece. Jessica Ronan is on casting duties, while Alice Normington, production design. Art direction is Talia Eccleston, Etienne Olaweski, and Vicky Stevenson. Sarah Kane is on set decoration. Costume design is Julian Day. And our cast, well, Mark is played by Dan Levy. His best friends are Sophie, played by Ruth Negga, and Thomas, played by Himesh Patel. Now, Mark has a husband called Oliver, played by Luke Evans. His accountant is Imelda, played by Celia Imrie. Oliver's father, Duncan, is played by David Bradley. Then there are Theo, played by Anud Valus. Luca, played by Mehdi Baki. There's Terence, who is dating Sophie. He's played by Jamal Westman. There's Lily Kane, played by Kathleen Deaver. Sebastian, played by Yuli Fuller. Remy, played by Noor Bezin. Esme, played by Cyrilie Debrulli. Peter Finley, played by Nigel Lilly. Manu, played by Gabriel Muck. And a performer, played by Emma Corrin. I mean, that's probably our main group. Now, the gist of the film is this. Mark chooses to distract himself from the pain of his mother's death by diving headfirst into a comfortable marriage with a charming, wealthy older man. But when his husband also dies unexpectedly, Mark's world is cracked wide open, forcing him and his two best friends to embark on a cathartic, life-affirming adventure to make peace with all the grief he's been evading. So, yeah, there we go. Now, I don't know, right? He chooses to distract himself from his mother's death by diving into this marriage. I mean, we don't really get that in the film, right? He talks about a few things towards the end, but in the film, we don't see the mother. We don't really have him referencing her death until later on. So I don't really know, right? I think the problem sometimes is these things, like you have these things and it's like, oh, this film is about this and blah, 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 blah. But I'm just like, I should be able to get it from the film, right? You shouldn't have to just tell me this thing. It should be evident. It wasn't really that evident because he seemed very happy in the marriage, right? It wasn't like the marriage was, oh, just running through the motions. We start off with a big party, like Christmas party and just celebrating and just all of this stuff. But Oliver has to go to a book signing in Paris. And so he has to leave early, which then everything goes wrong, right? Now, this is the feature directorial debut from Dan Levy. I am watching this thinking, something doesn't seem right here. I feel he's older than this. I forgot. I'm thinking of Eugene Levy, right? He was his dad. But I'm watching this and I'm thinking, look, it shot well. Other than there's some transitional shots, right? Them driving, walking through the streets, which it just didn't really do anything. I don't think it added anything to the film, right? And it's not like, yeah, in the shooting that anything crazy, spectacular is done with these shots. It's pretty run of the mill. So those things I would have jettisoned, right? But for the most part, you know, it's pretty stylish. It's, you know, well put together. I think the acting, well, I will say as well, enjoyed the music, liked all the song choices, all kind of stuff on playlists and everything like that. You know what I mean? So I thought I got down with that. The story. Now we've had stories like this, you know, which is all fine, right? It is interesting to see how someone else decides to do this. But I think you can buy all the things that happen, but there's so many things that seem real convenient, right? Like the whole Paris thing, like the Theo thing, like Luca, you know, just so many things, right? It's just all seems to be just dropping into place. And you're just like, and especially the end, right? It just, yeah, just felt a bit real convenient, right? And just a little cliche, especially moving to Brighton, just real cliche, right? But that's all fine, right? It's all, you can do these things, you know, people do it all the time. I just felt, though, that on an emotional level, it didn't seem to hit where it's meant to be hitting, right? You're dealing with someone that has suffered this loss, huge loss, right? On the back of his mother dying a few years ago. And supposedly he's still not over that, right? So these back-to-back losses, and then he gets hit with this other thing, which I will say, with the other thing, it was, oh, I'd like to introduce this thing. So it wasn't a, we're done, you know what I mean? But yeah, so there's all of these different things, but you didn't necessarily buy the emotional toil, right? It wasn't really there. And I mean, you can show someone trying to avoid something, but you still see that there's a big thing they're avoiding, and we didn't really get that. Then you've got like Sophie's situation, which again, it's hard to really feel it, right? There's some big things happening, but you just don't necessarily feel it, right? And I just think it's within the writing. Everything was a little bit surface level, right? With convenient, you know, monologues thrown in, right? There's the whole accountant bit towards the end. Right, real convenient, right? Just this perfectly put together statement. But that's what we get. There's a lot of that rather than the raw emotion that, you know, you would find in these visceral moments, right? When these things, this pain hits, right, that these real raw feelings, rather than, yeah, let's do this, and okay, he can stay, and just all, you're just like, oh, I don't, you know, these pat answers, like, oh, are you always going to be spoiled? I'm dealing with loss, it's a pain here to get caught up in your, and it's just like, yo, give me some truths here, man. Give me some truths, you know what I mean? And I think that's what this was, for me, that's what this was just missing, right? On a surface level, fine, right? It all fits together. And, you know, you've got these perfectly crafted scenes, be like, oh, these represent loss, where I'm just like, yo, if Homie had gone into a bookstore and he'd be like, oh, I'm trying to find this thing that feels like, yes, look at the, I feel that for me works better. Right? But that's just me, people. That's just me. I'm sure many people will be enjoying this film. But yeah, you know. Listen, if you like a film about relationships and, you know, people trying to get over a loss, right? Try and deal with this emotional roller coaster, as it were, then Good Grief could be for you. Kind of reminded me a little bit of A Good Person, right? In a way. So yeah, I'd say if you liked A Good Person, then I think you will like Good Grief. You know what I mean? It's, yeah, it's fine, but it would be good if it could have hit more. You know what I mean? If it could have just delved under the surface. But it is now, people. It's now on Netflix. So you can go enjoy if you think it sounds like something that could work for you. All right? Good grief. Okay, so this is actually our second Netflix film of the week. It is Society of the Snow. So, Society of the Snow, right? The new film from J.A. Bayona is now on Netflix. Bayona also co-wrote with Jaime Marquez, Nicolas Casariego, and Bernat Villaplana. It is based on a book, right, by Pablo Versi called La Sociedad de la Naive, which translated is The Society of the Snow, right? Yeah, so the film is produced by Belin Atienza, Philip Boulous, Sandra Hermidia, and J.A. Bayona. It is executive produced by Santiago Lopez Rodriguez and Lilia Saina. It is associate produced by Pablo Versi and line produced by Juan Lavas and Margarita Huguet. Michael Giacchino handles the music, Pedro Luque cinematography, Andreas Gill and Jami Marti edit the piece, Maria Laura Bush, Javier Brea and Iasad took care of casting, Alan Bien production design, art direction is Serafin Gonzalez, Carlos Wajax, Hedvig Kirley, David Temprano, and Matt Zugamadi. Set decoration is Angela Nahum with Julia Suarez on costume design. So the cast, we have got Enzo Vogrinkic Rolandan is Numa Turcati, Matthias Ricault is Roberto Canessa, Augustin Pardella is Nando Parado, Thomas Wolf is Gustav Zerbino, Diego Vegazzi is Marcelo Perez del Castillo, Esteban Cucurica is Adolfo Fitio Strach, Francisco Romero is Daniel Fernandez Strach, Rafael Federman is Eduardo Strach, Felipe Gonzalez Otano is Carlitos Paeza. Augustin Delia Corte is Antonio Tintin Vizintin. It's a lot of hard pronounced names. Valentino Alonso is Alfredo Pancho Delagio. Simon Hempy is Jose Luis Cuche Inserati. Fernando Contigini Garcia is Arturo Nogueira. I mean, there's so many people, man. I'm going to leave it there. But the gist of the film is this. In 1972, the Uruguayan Air Force Flight 571 chartered to fly a rugby team to Chile catastrophically crashes on a glacier in the heart of the Andes. Only 29 of the 45 passengers survived the crash. And finding themselves in one of the world's toughest environments, they are forced to resort to extreme measures to stay alive. I mean, 29 out of 45 people surviving a crash is frigging remarkable in itself. You know what I mean? Because this plane disintegrated. Right? I mean, this is the 70s. Health and safety was a lot different. And like part of that, you know, because I know regulations came in on how long a plane could be in service for, right? It's just things like that that weren't there at the time. So the way this plane just fell apart, 29 is real good. But this is a story that you heard about, right? This got referenced a lot back in the day, you know, and it was just hard to believe, right? You heard these people crashed in the Andes and made it out. Like, it's just like, how, right? And you know, not all of them made it, but just the fact that some made it, you're just like, I don't understand. But it's one of those things where you're trying not to go into too much detail, because this is, it's not a nice story. You know what I mean? It's just horrific. But there's been countless films and TV shows that have used the themes of this story. And that's the struggle for survival. Right? The what would you do scenario, right? What lengths would you go to survive? And so, yeah, I was curious. I didn't actually know that's what this film was about at first, you know what I mean? But yeah, it's, I mean, because we start off and we see this rugby team and the camaraderie between the players and everyone, and how they're convincing their friends, come on this trip, it's going to be great. Oh, we're going to have fun. And then they're at the airport, photos, just, you know, and then there's all these other people on the plane as well. You know, girlfriends, parents, just all of that. And so, you know, they're on the plane and you're just like, okay, how is this gonna, and I have to say, I think the crash is like 20 minutes in, and the way they show this crash is frigging crazy, right? It's the impact. So you're seeing the seats just all compress and people get slammed into the ceiling, into the walls, into the windows, right? The like bones break. You know, it looks like necks have probably snapped. You just see it all. And it is, I mean, it's a remarkable feat to shoot, to capture that kind of footage. Like the way they put all that together, I have no clue how they did it, but it looked great for what it is. But it's so just like, god damn, like, do I want to continue watching this film? Right, just because. Now listen, I've seen gnarlier shit, right, bloodier shit, but this is a real story. This is a real story, and you know it's gonna get worse. So it's just like, I don't know if I want to watch this, man. I really don't know. Am I in that, you know what I mean, mindset for this shit? But I continued watching it. And man, like, it's hard to, like, I didn't like it, right? It was just a tremendous feat putting this all together, right? And just trying to get that feeling, that sentiment of all these things that happened. That it was very well done, but I did not like this film. It is just, oh god damn, it was relentless, man. Like, it's a long film, you know, it's like 2 hours and 20 minutes roughly, right? I mean, another big thing is it's a Spanish film. Right, so obviously it's been dubbed, which definitely appreciate, because there's no way I'm doing 2 hours 20 with subtitles, you know what I mean? Like, doing a short film, a 20 minute film with subs is difficult, and especially with certain languages. Like, Spanish is a fast language, you know what I mean? It's not really very slow in the delivery. No, it's very fast. So yeah, fuck doing subtitles. So I appreciate the dub. It's just a lot of times with dub stuff, it doesn't feel like the voices are coming from these people, which obviously it's not, they're not, right? And you're thinking, does that voice match that person? Right? So there's an oddness in that. But cinematography wise, editing wise, acting wise, all of that jazz, like, this is very well done. It's, you know, just showing these scenes and like these people having these conversations, right, of, okay, so we're gonna have to eat people, and just those conversations, right? It's just grim, but very well handled. You know, some of the music, right? Because it's the music, it's like, oh, sentimental scene. It's like, I could do without that. But yeah, just some of these shots are incredible. And it's still, even though this is a real story, right? So we know the outcome. Just the ending bit, like, I don't know how that was done. I don't know, because rock climbing, that's a feat, right? You might think you're in shape, but you're using different muscles, right? Walking through snow, again, you might think you're in shape. It's different muscles, people. Like, it takes it out of you. Then you've got altitude sickness, right? So all of these things, 72, we don't have, the clothes are different, right? There's no, you know, fabric back then that's keeping you warm and dry. There's no merino wool, right? Waterproof was like something not everyone has. You don't have the same walking boots or just anything like that. So all of those things, then you add on to people that have lived basically on no food for 2 months. I do not know how the fuck they did that. I don't know. They're not really wearing gloves, so I'm just surprised any of them have fucking fingers, right? With the frostbite, the frost freezing on the face, just all of these things. I don't know how this was done, but it was, and it's incredible, you know? So, look, we've had films that have kind of looked at this, you know, stuff like, well, we got Alive, right? That was something that dealt with that kind of stuff, survival. Boy, man, there's just been a few, you know, stuff like Everest and, you know, things like that. Right, then you've got stuff like The Grey, which I don't believe The Grey was based on a true story, but, you know, right, The Impossible. So you have these films of these crazy things, and especially films that dealt with this actual thing, like Alive. You know, I believe the TV show Yellow Jackets, right, is about a kind of similar thing. I think, I've not seen it yet, but I think it's about a girls' football team, soccer team, right, who survive a plane crash. So they have to eat each other and all of that kind of business. I believe that's what it's about. So it's one of them things that has been utilized because this is such a crazy, horrific story. So yeah, if you're down with that, if you're down with that, right, if you're, you know, in that frame of mind to deal with this kind of shit, boom, check it out, people, check it out. But understand, this is not a happy film. And even at the end, because you're just thinking, right, everyone's taking pictures, the journalists are there and all of that, but these people, this will be with them probably every day. You know what I mean? Maybe every hour of every fucking day. Right? It's not something that leaves you. So, and then once people know, oh, you ate people. Right? It's, you know, it's insane. It's fucking insane. So, yeah, if you're in a mindset for this kind of story, it's definitely powerful, people. It's definitely powerful, you know what I mean? And it's on Netflix. So, Society of the Snow, it's out, it's long, right? It's grimy as fuck, but it's based on reality. It's something that happened. So, yeah, it's... Man, it leaves a mark. Let's just say that. All right, so, yeah. Didn't love it, didn't like it, but boy, this was something. This was something, people. So yeah, maybe check it out. Next up, we have a new indie joint, and it's called Reflect. Okay, people. So my boy Justin has sent me a new indie flick called Reflect. This is... Oh, where's the information? It's all over the place. Ah. Okay, so here we are. Yes, it's the feature directorial debut from Dana Kippel. She also wrote the piece. She also serves as a producer along with Lone Thatch, Grace Patterson, Brian Deuce, Ryan Jack Connell, Zach Coates. It's executive produced by Michael Thomas Delano, Rob Landau, Associate produced by Michael Talbot, Adam Robe. Travis W. Brewer. Jadelyn Breyer. And Kevin Berry. With assistance from Rhiannon Mueller-Trotter, Michael Oaken, and Robert Conway. Ched Tolver handles the music. Bernie Tarin, cinematography. Caden Finch, Kay Spencer Jones, and Marissa Patterson are on editing duties. Diana Price and Erica Tengali are on art direction. And our cast. Well, we have got Dana Kipple starring as Summer. There's Jadelyn Breyer as Liz. We've got Katie, played by Grace Patterson. There is, where's the other friends? Annie, played by Marissa Patterson. Okay. Nia, played by Arena Brown. All right. Merle is played by Talon Cullen. We got Chris, played by Jake Klanikic. The younger version of Katie is played by Jamie Graves. Kia is played by Jerome Alona. Ron is played by Caden Finch. Beal is played by Ryan Jack Connell. We've got Inanna, played by Campbell Crates. Moon is played by Maya Neal. Father John is played by Chris Levin. Geppetto, played by Nathaniel Burns. James is played by Corey Brooks. Hermes, played by Joe Philippoon. Zero is played by Dash Katz. Right, so yeah, there are our characters. Now, the gist of the film is... Unhappy with her current relationship, Summer sets out on the road trip to Sedona, Arizona, accompanied by her four gal pals to a spiritual obstacle course. Upon arriving, Upon arriving, they are greeted by their uncanny host, Hermes, who leads them into the vast desertscape, which becomes the foreground for the interdimensional game show they are unknowingly all participating in. Transported, they begin a colorful and surrealistic journey of the soul, diving into issues surrounding trauma, mental health, and female relationships. The girls start to go missing one by one, as they discover they are being followed by mysterious hooded figures. As the tension rises, who will figure out how to escape this and become the last one standing, ultimately winning the game of life? Okay, so we have a director's statement. All right, Dana says, I write to represent a female perspective. I am influenced by my own life, nature, various metaphysical and philosophical texts, the heroine's journey, mythology, and futuristic subject matter. I love creating all genres of film infused with a metaphysical twist. I crave open endings that implore the audience to think. I aim to inspire all people to embrace their unique perspective by discovering their inner power and to develop true connection to self, others, and the world around us. Right. So, yes, that's what she said. Also, it said, reflect features performances by acclaimed actress Grace Patterson, reality star influencer Corey Brooks, and influencer Jadelyn Breyer. The script was inspired by experts in The Red Book by Carl Jung, the artwork of Agnes Pelton, and the book The Heroine's Journey by Maureen Murdoch. The film is also heavily based on personal experiences with mental health trauma of the writer. Reflect was on location in Sedona, Arizona, filming in and around areas called magnetizing energetic vortexes, such as tourist hotspots, Cathedral Rock, and the Birthing Cave, that inspired the film's subject matter. 90% of the film takes place outdoors in nature. Reflect has a female writer, director, and is made up of 5 female leads. Reflect passes the Bechamel test. The test simply asks whether a film features at least 2 women talking to each other about something other than men. Okay. So, here we go. Now, there's something here, right? You know, it's like Kippel, you know, she says that she, you know, she's using past experiences of trauma and mental health and all of that. So there is that in the film, clearly. And we have these women talking about relationships and things such as that. But I think, although, you know, I think you like many different genres, and I don't think things necessarily have to be tied into one thing. They can be whatever the fuck you want them to be, right? But I think it's making sense of a story, right? Making everything be like, oh, that's why they would do this thing, right? That's why this is happening. Now, other things, you can have mystery here, can have open endings, that's all fine. But I think the actions of the characters need to make some sort of sense. They could be crazy things they're doing, but you can be like, oh, I understand why they would think that's the thing to do, right? I get why they do this thing. Now, we don't seem to get that here, right? It's just, I mean, we start off and it's like Summer's having a dream, right? And we see all of these flashbacks, which end up to be stuff we see later in the film, but we don't know that at the time. And just this voice going, have you found yourself? Have you found yourself? Have you found yourself? Which, the voice, and there's a lot of kind of these out-of-body voices that we hear in this film, they aren't the clearest. You know, it would have been better to get a bit clearer audio on those voices, I feel. But, you know, she's in bed with a boyfriend. There seems no chemistry there between either. And it's like she's not overly warm to him. He's not overly warm to her. I mean, he does go, oh, you should go on your retreat. That sounds like a great, but it doesn't really feel like either like each other. So then the whole relationship issues, like, okay, but what are they? We don't know. Now, stuff comes clear later on, But that's only from stuff that is talked about, right? And that stuff feels a bit out there, right? Like, these things are happening and, you know, someone's like, oh, I did this thing. And you're just like, but it comes out of like, huh? And then you're just like, oh, so there's connection between, you know what I mean? It feels all just pulled out of thin air. And that's a lot of the things feel like they're pulled out of thin air. So you can then do this next thing. But you've got these girls going on a trip. It doesn't feel like any research was done into this trip, which in this day and age, we have Google, we have the internet, DuckDuckGo, all of these different things. How are you saying that they're booking a trip but have done no research into what it is? And when you get there, this guy's holding this tiny bag that supposedly has 5 dresses in it. Now, all of these dresses fit perfectly. They're all different styles, which feels kind of weird, right? If you don't know who's, like, you know, you're just catering for all of these people that come through your thing, you're not going to have mad different, you will just have one cut, one style of thing that fits everyone, essentially, right? A belt, it's fast, you can fasten, you can loosen, you know what I mean? That's what it would be, but they've all got these perfectly fitting dresses, all different styles. It's just like, 5 dresses weren't in that little bag, and what the fuck, what's the deal? You know what I mean? So it's a weird thing, plus there's nowhere to change, right? So if someone says to you, oh, just change behind a cactus, you'd be like, fuck you, I'm going home. But they don't, and that's just weird, right? There's too many obstacles to them actually doing this whole retreat. You know what I mean? It's a bit weird. I mean, just like, make it make sense, right? Because otherwise, they're not going on this thing. No one's believing they're going on this thing when all of this weird shit happens. Like, the guy selling stuff, the guy coming to the car. Too many weird things happen for you to go, yeah, 5 girls are gonna just go, oh, okay, still, cool, let's still do this thing in the middle of nowhere. No, you know what I mean? We need a better through line into that. Like, the camera, there's a lot of wobbly shots, which, like, free-form camera work is cool and all, but needs to do something. It needs to be helping the story, but the wobbliness is not doing anything, really. And we're flipping through genres, which is fine, and it's interesting because you are like, oh, what the fuck is happening here? But again, it's a little random. It's a little random. And this whole game show thing seems to be coming out of nowhere. I do think there's some okay ideas here. It's the execution that feels a little bit mishandled, a little bit misjudged, you know? I think that Kippel, she's got 2 other films, right, that are in pre-production and development. So this is that learning curve, right? This is the thing that helps show you, okay, this is where I need to work on. This is where I can go. These are my strengths. These are my weaknesses. These are things I need to work on. That's what I think this is. So, you know, all power to Dana for getting this done. Her first film. right? Now it will be interesting to see where she goes from there. Because I think just this whole thing about the Bechamel test, it's all well and good going, oh, it's directed by a woman. It's written by a woman. We've got five women leads. But the story is the king here, right? Without a good story, we don't have anything. It doesn't mean anything. So, listen, I think it's interesting, right? There is something there. But it just needs polishing. It needs polishing. So I think if you enjoy, you know what this kind of reminds me of? There was that crazy ass film from, I think it was Sci-Fi London, right? It was Cade. Remember that one? That crazy ass film, man. This reminds me of that. If you enjoyed Cade, then I think Reflect is all for you. Yeah, that's what I reckon. Now, this will be hitting VODs on the 9th of January. So, people, again, if you enjoy Cade, then I think you will get down with Reflect. So, mark it down, 9th of January. Have fun, people. We have another indie joint and another film that is just about to drop. It is called Lord of Misrule. Okay, so the Lord of Misrule. Boy, this one, very friggin' creepy indeed, right? It is the new film from William Brent Bell, written by Tom DeVille. The film is produced by Brent Bell, Nick Bauer, Alison Brister, Laurie Cook, Deepak Nair, Jason Newmark, and James Tomlinson. It's executive produced by Ozin O'Neill, Adam Nagel, Stephen Kelleher, John Gleason, Yana Georgievera, Ed Freeman, Mark Fielding, and Laura Brooke. It is line produced by Danielle Harvey. Okay, so Brett Data handles the music. Simon Rowling, cinematography. Andrew Levin edits the piece. While Alison Butler is production design. Stephen Granger, art direction. Clemency Carthright, set decoration, and Libby Da Costa is costume design. Our cast, well, Rebecca Holland is played by Tuppence Middleton. Her husband Henry is played by Matt Stokey, and her daughter Grace is played by Evie Templeton. There is Joycelyn Abney, who's played by Ralph Ineson. We've got George Furley, played by Anton Valenci. Miri Tremlow, played by Rosalind March. Byrony Furley, played by Alexa Goddard. Graham Nash, played by Robert Goodman. Ida Tremlow, played by Jane Wood. D.I. Hive, played by David Langham. Derry Nash, played by Luke Innocen. David Garfoot, played by George Keller. Oh, Callie Furlow, played by Katrina Yulee. That's probably the main group. Now, the gist. Rebecca Holland has recently taken over as vicar of a rural English village. When her young daughter Grace goes missing at the local festival, the villagers and local police join in a desperate search. However, the closer they edge towards finding Grace, the more secrets emerge from the village's dark past. Soon, Rebecca must decide just how much she is willing to sacrifice to rescue her daughter from the grip of evil. Now, there's a bit of a kind of statement-ish type of thing. So, let's do this. Producer Nick Bauer became involved in a project in 2021. Through James Newark, who had developed the script with his partner Laurie Cook. Jason and Laurie had wanted to work with screenwriter Dom DeVille for some time. We pitched him the concept of a vicar as a central character battling an evil force that was linked to their city church, explains Laura Cook. Tom took this idea and came back with something wholly original, with its own detailed mythology, resetting the story to a rural village and weaving in a backstory about origins of the church there and its battle with a pagan sect. Now, playing on from that, it says, around the time that Tom DeVille was working on the script for Lord of Misyu, he was aware that two very significant things were happening. Firstly, people were starting to take renewed interest in folk horror through the rediscovery of writers like Robert Aichman. And secondly, the real world was torn apart by some very messy politics. Brexit in the UK, Trump in the US. For DeVille, these two elements went hand in hand. As he explains, folk horror is fundamentally about old fears and superstitions turning people against each other, generally driven by blind faith. That's exactly what we saw happening in that period of recent history. So Lord of Misrule became my film that about populism, the way it's turned politics into blind faith, and the way so many people choose blind faith to decide how they will live their lives and shape the lives of others. Now, that's definitely a thing to some extent. I'm not quite sure how much. He also says when it was, the film was originally called Heretic, the story was set in London and the enemy were devil worshippers. But Lord of Misrule was set in the countryside and DeVille created an old superstition around Galogog that would take over the village when the vicar's child went missing. Now, I think all of these things are very interesting. And I think the film really does create an atmosphere. Oh my days, it really creates an atmosphere. The score works very, a lot of strings, creepy music. There's the understanding of how to change the focus, right? The angles used and the use of cut editing, right? Lingering on a scene for a stretch longer than normal, cutting away quickly from another, right? Reversing the angles. All of these things really do work very well to create this unnerving atmosphere and you're not quite sure what's happening or where we're going, right? There's a lot of kind of visions, which, wait, was that real? Is that a vision? Right? There's a lot of that at some points. So you're definitely a little perplexed and wondering, who can you trust? Right? What's the overarching thing in this place? Right? Is it the Christian church? Is it this pagan belief? Right? What's happening? So that was like, oh, okay. Where are we going? What are we doing? Now, there were a few things that I wasn't quite, because I think, as in the synopsis, it says that, you know, as they get closer to finding grace, well, we don't really get that, because from the beginning, there is a resistance here. Like, the police are acting weird. So I think the kind of misbalance between the church and this other thing, that I think there's no clue of at the beginning, right? Rebecca has no inkling of any of this. I think it's becomes too evident too quickly, right? I think if it was a little bit subtler, and there's certain, you'd be like, wait, is this in her mind? Is this the grief? What is happening? But, you know, straight away you can see, oh, there's something. And I think we're shown something, but when someone's at a piano, that you just been like, ah, that probably, no, you shouldn't have seen that there. Because seeing it, you then go, okay, something's up here. Where if we hadn't have seen it, I think you would have been a bit more, ooh, where are we going here? Right? Which would have made it super just like tense up to the very end. You know what I mean? I think then there is the question of the sacrifice Rebecca is willing to make. We don't really see it. Like, obviously she's done it, but we don't really see it. Right? And I think it works best if you understand the magnitude of what someone has to do. You know what I mean? So I think it's very interesting, right? It's very interesting. The acting is very good. Though, I will say, I wasn't quite sure about the relationship with Henry and Rebecca. Didn't fully buy a loving couple, but the acting is very good. The kids do a really good job as well. So there's a lot really going for this film. And I think if you do like those kind of creepy, folklore-ish kind of things, you know, like I hear Midsommar is very good. Haven't seen it, but it lives inside Cobweb, Nyan, all very good, right? I wouldn't say Lord of Mischief is quite up there, but if you enjoy those films, I think you will have a nice time with Lord of Mischief, right? Yeah, I think it will work for you people, and you will be able to check it out, right, when it hits a VOD near you on Monday, the 8th of January. So yeah, mark it down. Monday the 8th, Lord of Mischief. Ooh, do you want you want to go into the woods? Do you want to mess around with creepy stuff? Well, that's the date for you people. Okay, so this last film, it came out last year, came out in 2023, but it's such a banger, we had to go out with it. So people, get ready for some polite society. Okay, people, so just had the pleasure of watching Polite Society. This was written and directed by Nida Manzoor. The film is produced by John Pocock, Oliver Kampfer, Eric Fellner, and Tim Bevan. It is executive produced by Cecilia Frugelli, co-produced by Rachel Alabaster, and associate produced by Angela Monique and Fia Poulette. Tom Howe and Shez Manzoor handle the music. Ashley Connor is on cinematography, while Robbie Morrison edits the piece. Aisha Bywaters took care of casting. Simon Walker, production design, with James Cross, Ellie Jones, and Sophie Lockwood on art direction. Set decoration is Mandy Sorin, and PC Williams handles costume design. So, the cast of the film, we have got Priya Kansara as Ria Khan. Ritu Ara is her sister, Lena Khan, her older sister, Lena Khan. Her mother is Fatima, played by Shubhu Kapoor. And her dad is Rafi, played by Jeff Mirza. Right now, Ria has got two best friends. Right, there is Clara, played by Serafina Beth, and Alba, played by Ella Broccoleri. And Lena has a fiance, right, who is Salim Shah, played by Aksha Kamana. His mother is Rahila Shah, played by Nimra Booker. And yeah, actually, we don't meet his dad. No, we don't. Maybe, I can't remember if there's a reference. Jesus Christ, my memory is terrible. There's Kovacs, Ria, Clara, and Alba's school bully, played by Shona Babayemi. There's also Edith, another of the mean girls at the school, played by Sally Ann. And there's Eunice Hoothart, right, who, is a big inspiration for Ria, and we do hear her in the film. She has a voice part, as it were. Right, there's Mrs. Nuaz, played by Renu Brindle. Mrs. Abbas, played by Rekha John Cherian. Miss Spence, played by Jenny Fennell. Who else do we have? Miss Ikapol, played by Sophie Aisling. Mrs. Ahmed, played by Sue McLaughlin. Jezza, played by Tia Dutt. Who else? The head waiter at the wedding, played by James McNicholas. The registrar, played by Tom Bonington. Yeah, that is probably our main group of people. All right, so the gist of the story, right, says it's a merry mashup of sisterly affection, parental disappointment, and bold action. Polite society follows martial artist in training, Rhea Khan, who believes she must save her older sister, Lena, from her impending marriage after enlisting the help of her best friends. Rhea attempts to pull off the most ambitious of all wedding heists in the name of independence and sisterhood. Boy, oh boy, this film, people, this film is fucking tremendous, right? And the crazy thing, it's Nida Manzur's feature directorial debut. Right now, she's done 3 shorts. She's done some TV work. 2 episodes of Doctor Who. You know what I mean? So it's not like she doesn't know her way behind a camera, right? And how to put pen to paper. But it's always a different thing doing a feature, right? Always a different thing. You know what I mean? Just getting the balance of comedy, action, authenticity. That's a difficult thing, right? You oftentimes see a film where, boom, the sentimental moments are fire. The jokes and all that are horrible. Or the action is just ropey as fuck. So when you find someone who hits that triple threat, right, gets all those elements so well done in their first motherfucking feature, yo, you gotta take note, people. You got to take note. And yeah, this film was, as I say, it's tremendous, right? Out the gate, I am laughing. I am laughing so hard, right? Because you've got Rhea, right? She wants to be this stunt woman, right? Martial arts, she's got a YouTube channel, The Fury. You know what I mean? And like a lot of times with these things, it's either someone is straight terrible, right? Not good at all. Or they're the best. And the fun thing with this is, like, we get some footage of her at, I'm not sure if it's a competition or if it's just, you know, sparring in class. But she's going toe-to-toe with this boy, and she's getting her licks in, he's getting his in. You know what I mean? And that's great. I think that's good. Showing someone that, look, they've got skills, but they're not necessarily the best all the time, that's great. Right, because then it makes you think, oh, who's going to win a fight, right? But when you've seen them just kick everyone's ass at the beginning, you're just like, ah. I mean, these fight scenes don't really mean anything. They're obviously going to win, right? And so that was great. That's a great way to start. Also, the chemistry between, you know, Rhea and Lena is fantastic. I mean, you believe that these are sisters and they love each other, right? Priya and Ritu, just phenomenal performances, people. They just, the way they convey these emotions, like when it's just like, can you help me with a video? They're like, no. And then you just got her pulling her off the bed and she's just fighting it. But when she's doing the video, be like, yeah, that's it. You can do it. That was great. You're awesome. That's fantastic. It's just, oh man, it was just so great to see. So great to see, right? And I mean, the other big thing about this film, we've seen films, right, where someone is trying to stop a wedding. But it's always because either, right, they're jealous, they love the person, right, or they believe something's up, but it's not really. But with this one, she wants her sister to be the best she can be, right? She's just like, you should be an artist. That's your dream. I want you to be, you're going to be the best. Your work is incredible, right? We don't usually get that shit. So it's a different thing. Now, the fact that then this film jumps into sci-fi and fantasy is just a motherfucking treat, yo. It's a motherfucking treat, right? We get these twists that you're like, wait, what? I did not see that. Wait, did I miss something? What's happening here? You know what I mean? It's just, oh my God, it's incredible. It's incredible. Then we've got this supporting cast. People. The supporting cast, Jesus Christ. Her best friends, right? Clara and Alba, Serafina and Ella are just, oh my God, they're killers. Shona as well, as Kovacs, right? These girls smash it. They smash it, right? It's comedy timing. It's those emotions of best friends and bully. All of this, it just what, like, one of my favorite lines Serafina delivers towards the end of the film is, your mum's a slag and your cat is too. Slice. Oh shit, that's so funny. That's so, oh my gosh. And it's just full, it's chock-a-block of killer lines, people. Just these killer lines that feel right. You're just like, yo, in that situation, yeah, that's the thing you would be saying. You would say that shit. You know what I mean? That's where it works. That's where it works, man. So they just, everything is spot on. And the martial arts? The martial arts. Man, it was great. Now, I'm not saying it was John Wick, right? But it was not shoddy. Right? It was not shoddy. It wasn't one of them ones where you can, you go, I mean, that kick, that punch, they didn't even land. Like, what are we doing here? You know what I mean? The martial arts was great. And you threw in some of that over the topness. Right? So there was those elements of Scott Pilgrim in here. You know what I mean? With like Rhea flying across the room. I mean, the fight between, well, I won't say, but there's a fight mid-film, right? Fight mid-film in the house. That's all I can say. That fight was fucking fun. That fight was so fun. Just, people, you know what I mean? Look, doing this, talking about films, right? And when you understand the work that goes in, right, the people are pouring their passion, right? No one's trying to make a bad film. So it's difficult sometimes because you don't want to be too harsh. Now, sometimes people are mad crazy and you're just like, yo, what you did there, nah, come on now. But you want to be respectful. But when you see something that is just so fucking good, it's not hard at all. It's not hard at all, people. Right? So, listen. I was going to see this a while back, but I was mad ill and I couldn't make it to the screening, which I was so irritated about. You know what I mean? So when I saw this on Now, I was just like, yo, I gotta watch this shit. And I'm so glad I did. Now, I will say, if you liked, You Are So Not Invited to My Bar Mitzvah, right? If you liked Rye Lane, you're going to love Polite Society. Now, it's not to say that it's like those films, right? Because, you know, Rye Lane, it's that kind of, it's fucking hilarious. But it's kind of like that romance film. You feel me? And You're Not So Invited to, You're So Not Invited to My Bar Mitzvah. It's that coming of age angsty. So it's kind of more similar to that one with the friend dynamics and everything. But the comedy of Rye Lane was just so on point. And Bar Mitzvah. So that's why I mentioned both films. You know what I mean? But I just think those two films got it so right. You know? And when you're dealing with young people, so many times we see people just try and tell these stories that you're just like, yo, people don't talk like that, right? People don't interact like that. What the fuck are we doing? So when you see people smash it, you've got to point that shit out. So if you like those films, people, I mean, just listen, if you like cinema, if you like great stories, you need to see this film. Right. And it's another great example of taking down those barriers, right? Allowing different voices to tell stories. Because as I said, we've seen countless films, TV shows about people trying to split up weddings. This one went in such a different direction. It was bold, it was brash, it was funny, charming, exciting, right? And we get some different motherfucking faces on the screen, right? So yes, people, I definitely recommend you check this film out. It was definitely one of the top films of 2023. Now, I know it's 2024. But if you watched it when it actually came out, it would definitely be in your list of top films of that year. So go see it. It's phenomenal. And I don't throw those things around lightly, people. So, Polite Society, go check it out. Okay, people, so we are coming to a close on another episode, but before we do, let us take a look and see what's happening in the world of film. Now, it's not a great deal this week, but a few little things are going down, right? One being Michael Mann has confirmed that he too will be going into production this year. He's supposedly just finishing off a few tweaks to the script. Okay. In some other news, Noah Baumbach's new film, J. Kelly, will also be going into production this year. It stars George Clooney and Adam Sandler. I do like some Noah Baumbach, so I am looking forward to that one. Stephen Knight, right, has given a little update on the Peaky Blinders film in an interview with Radio Times. Right, he said, "I'm just working on the final bits of it at the moment. I just sit down at the keyboard and start. It's a bit like having a dream for me. You sit there and all of this stuff comes. And then you read it back and think, That's pretty good. But where did it come from? The plan is to start shooting that in the middle of next year, which meaning this year, 2024, people. Okay. Jack Black has signed up for the Minecraft movie coming from Warner Brothers, Vertigo, and Legendary, right? I know nothing about Minecraft, but he's supposedly playing a character called Steve, right? I don't know what that means. It must mean something to all them gamers out there. So, yeah, there you have it, all right? Okay, so in some release news, Next Goal Wins, right, which is currently in the UK charts, it will be hitting digital VODs on the 16th of January, and you will be able to own it on Blu-ray and DVD from the 27th of February, right? Also, Killers of the Flower Moon, that will be coming to Apple TV next week, right, on the 12th of January. That's a Friday, just in case you weren't quite sure. I forget what day it is, people, so yeah, little helping hand there. Now, last week it was Lionsgate and E1. This week it's Blumhouse and Atomic Monster. Yes, the horror powerhouses. Well, they were small houses, but powerful content, right? They have joined forces. Yep, they have merged into one company. Now, I don't know what that one company is going to be called. Right, there's been no word on a name or anything like that. We just know that, yeah, they've merged and they've got a big film dropping soon called Night Swim, which sounds creepy as fuck, right? Whew. So yeah, there you go, Blumhouse. Well, would it be Atomic Blumhouse? That would work, right? Blumhouse Monster, not so much. So yeah, Atomic Blumhouse could be the new name. I don't know, people. I don't know. Now, Dark Horizon put together all the, you know, what would you call it? The takings, let's say, the box office takings in the States for all the major studios, right? Combined, it's like 9 billion, you know what I mean? So, supposedly, for cinema, which is dying, you know what I mean? That's a lot of money. And every studio has basically taken more than they did the previous year. Right, Universal took the most with 1.93 billion, which is up 18% from last year. Disney, and everyone was talking about Disney really stinking this year. Not so much. It did 1.89 billion, right? Up 2% from last year. You know, Warner Brothers, 1.4 billion, up 50%, right? Supposedly, Barbie was a big contribution to that. Wonka brought in money, but because Wonka's end of the year, I'm sure that's going to help them out this year as well. Sony, they came in fourth with 955 million, up 13%. Right, Paramount fifth with 837 million. Now they were the only one to make a loss from the previous year. I mean, it's not really a loss, right? But they were down 35%. And Top Gun Maverick just killed it for them last year. You know what I mean? So, well, in 2022, let's say. Because, yeah, last year is 2023. Right? Still feels a little weird. You know what I mean? Lionsgate were up 623%, which is insane. They took in $580 million. Hunger Games at John Wick and Saw really did gangbusters for them. You know what I mean? And now with the acquisition of E1, I'm sure that's going to go up even more. Amazon took in $270 million. That's 164% from last year. Creed 3, Air, and The Boys in the Boat, along with Saltburn, are really buoying that up. Joining forces with MGM. Not a bad one, right? For a genre that's meant to be dying, cinema, it's done all right. It's done all right. That is us for this week, people. I do believe next week is a two-parter. I might be wrong. Just need to confirm some things. But yeah, we have conversations coming your way. So, people, hope you're looking forward to that. Now, share with your friends. Go subscribe to the YouTube. You know what I mean? Help us build this thing. 2024 is going to be big. Trust me. And I hope you stay along for the ride. All right. Enjoy your film watching. Go see Polite Society. And enjoy. Peace.